Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. Interesting. Mm. That's why you need Robert Half. Yep. I don't think that's a person. That's the company.
Okay, I was confused.
Yeah, their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI. Welcome to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing, and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. See, at Robert Half, they know talent. I wish I had had Robert Half back in the day when I was hiring.
Okay.
So, no offense, Sona.
Oh, I feel like you did mean to offend me.
Yes, you wouldn't be here if I had had Robert Half. Okay. Visit RobertHalf.com today. Noom uses the latest in proven behavioral science to empower people to take control of their health for good. Noom builds personal plans that can meet an individual's needs, takes into account dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs to build a plan that works for you. Through a combination of psychology, technology, and human coaching, their platform has helped millions of users meet their personal health and wellness goals. I think a lot of intelligence has gone into the whole Noom system. They really think about how humans live, how they think, what their psychology is, and it's all been used to help people control their weight. So stay focused on what's important to you with the Noom psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom, N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now, wherever books are sold.
Hi, my name is Werner Herzog, and I feel a little bit weird about being Conan O'Brien's friend, because I met him only once, and that was in front of cameras.
Yes, yes.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I just announced the show, speaking through Sona's, you were grumbling or coughing or what were you doing, clearing your throat?
I was clearing, I'm a throat clearer.
Yeah.
I do that.
I made it quite clear I was starting the show and I heard him.
Can I say something though? You sounded like you were going to start it like four times, but you didn't. So I just thought you weren't.
You never know when I will strike. Oh my God, what is wrong with you? My God, that was real. This is a mess. That was Matt Gourley sneezing his mind out. You okay? You got the sniffles?
Just, I have so much COVID right now.
Oh!
Let's go over in this chamber together. We're broadcasting from the Sphere in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Maybe it is time that we take stock of, you know, I'm the editor and I know what we all do, our own little ticks, because you clear your throat quite a bit.
You
do. Yeah, I do.
And I hear it.
And you what you just did right now.
What
which
did
is
I do?
To begin a sentence with a...
Yeah, you do that. I hear that.
Listen, I do that on purpose. I go... And that's my way of letting the sound engineer know that I'm about to speak. It's
a little code
that we worked out. Isn't that right, Eduardo?
It works. You know what?
And guess what? Another thing. I think that it shows a lot of forethought and planning on my part.
Yeah. Do you know how much work that is? I take all of those out.
Why?
Wow.
I put those in on purpose.
Wait, no. Matt has a tick too. He does a lot of plosives. Pops, plosives.
Yeah,
you do. You do a lot of plosives. And then Eduardo has to take those
exactly.
out.
That's probably a lie.
Yeah. And Wardo also, you just stink to high heaven.
Oh, yeah.
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 You just, I mean, I don't know what it is.
That comes through on the mic.
I know. Yeah. We were talking about our mic ticks.
You have an audible stench.
You got personal. That's just not cool.
Okay. Yeah. Let's try it all at once. Okay. We'll all do our personal things that we do all at once. And Wardo, put your armpit to the microphone. And 1, 2, 3, go.
P.U.
Before I begin, I go, is that right? And you have
just
to take it out.
Well, and then you go like.
All right. What if I tried not to do that anymore? That would make your life easier.
Oh, boy, would it? Yeah.
maybe I substitute it for something else. So anyway,
But see, the audience wouldn't even know that this is an issue because they're never in the final product. Same with the throat clearing.
Oh, really? I try to clear it off mic.
You do not. You make more noise.
Yes, I do. I sometimes do. I do this and then I cough at my elbow.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
What do? Gargle with fava beans before you get on the mic?
No, I don't know why I do that. I think I talk incorrectly.
Speak incorrectly.
Shut up. I'm sorry. That was mean.
that was mean?
I think that's you're nothing. Okay with that one.
Yeah.
It was so just instinctive. No, I think I speak incorrectly. You're supposed to speak from your diaphragm. I'm just like up here.
Well, I think.
Oh, God.
Well, now these ones I don't have to take out. Which
no,
is
you
nice.
Can leave these in.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep an eye on that from now on because you work very hard making sure that this product, and it is a product, goes out to people for free for some reason, is of the highest quality. And you work hard removing our little ticks. God knows what the listener or fan isn't hearing.
Maybe for this, the Werner Herzog episode, which I have not yet edited, I'll leave them all in and just for a taste, just so people can see.
I wouldn't do it. I think people will hate the podcast. And we might be sued by Werner Herzog.
Oh.
It's possible.
He's got some of his own tics. That...
He accused me of being quite insane several times. He accuses everyone of being, you're enveloped in madness. I saw him yelling at a toad outside the studio. Mr. Toad, you are enveloped by insanity and madness. Mr. Herzog, would you like to come in? Oh, sorry. How are you, Mr. Toad? Ribbit. I am going to do the best I can to be a little more professional. Do we have buttons that we can push?
Like delay buttons?
Or like cough buttons?
Cough buttons.
Not, yeah. Not
why don't we currently. Have those? Because I recently recorded something at SXM Studios, SiriusXM, and they had all these cool buttons that were quite helpful. And I thought, huh, these don't exist in the studio that Eduardo designed.
I was told not to give you toys that you can like just push at any time.
Oh my God.
That makes so much sense. Whoever made that call made the right call.
I'm like a chimp in a capsule. I'm like a chimp in a space capsule.
Oh.
Don't let him near any controls.
I love that there was a conversation about it.
Wait, adults
had a meeting.
Adults had a conversation and said there shouldn't be any buttons going to push.
That is great.
I won't rat anybody out.
Who was it? I want to know. Give me a name.
I can't say.
I bet it was Jeff Ross.
No,
was
don't
it Jeff Ross?
Say
oh.
it.
Oh. Adam Sachs.
Can neither confirm nor deny.
No, that you can't make him do it. The snitches get stitches.
That's right.
You can't make him do
not
that.
Not around here, they don't. Snitches get passive aggressive.
Snitches get riches here.
Yeah. I don't think it would be a problem to have those buttons. And it's not like you can go crazy with a cough button. Now, if there was a button that made a coughing sound, I'd be hitting that all the time.
Or the fart button.
Oh, yeah. My God, I would love a fart button. Yeah. Yeah. Just hitting that. And you know what? I'd make sure that I was waiting till like, and today we're talking to Dame Judi Dench. Now, Dame Judi Dench, you've done such an incredible, well, thank you. I'm hitting all these sound effects buttons. And then she just says, I am never doing that podcast again. Dame Judi Dench, that got 8 million listeners. And your movie went through the roof. Then have me back instantly. I love that farting podcast. I want buttons. Get me buttons
okay,
at work.
I'll get you buttons.
The king demands a fart button.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get you a button.
I want buttons. I want levers. I want all kinds of things. I want to look like Willy Wonka.
You know what we should get him as a Bop It? Do you remember Bop It?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's
it's that toy that has all those things. It's basically like a kid's toy, but you have to like hit it and it goes, awooga.
Awooga. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a great podcast you would have if I had that thing.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. Wait, you looked uncertain. All right, well, there's no transition here. I also need a transition. That would help right now.
Yeah.
Well, my guest today is a legendary filmmaker.
Oh, man.
Who's made over 70 films. Including Grizzly Man and Fitzcarraldo. Now he has a new memoir entitled Every Man for Himself and God Against All. He is revered. He's esteemed. He's a true artist. He should not be here. I'm excited, though, that he has joined us. Werner Herzog, welcome. Werner, you don't know who I really am. And so you don't really know if you could be my friend. You don't know what kind
of course, and we have seen each other only once. Cameras rolling, and we haven't hit the bars. We haven't been in high school together. We haven't rafted down a jungle river, and so on.
So. Yes, yes, yes. I understand that it's going to be harder for me to become your close friend
yes,
than it is
it
for...
Yes, it won't happen in half an hour, an hour of being together, but that's fine. Let's try our best anyway.
What about if it were to exist, would you say 5 hours would do it? Or are you talking it would take more lifetime than either of us has left?
It actually has happened in my life once or twice that I became an instantaneous friend to somebody.
Oh.
I played in a soccer team, which was the best in Peru at the time.
Yes.
And I just did the condition training mm-hmm. with them. But all of a sudden, when they had the team A playing against team B, there was one player missing and the coach said, "You play team B. Which position would you like to play?" And I said, "I want to play against one of the best in the world was in that team." He was voted as one of the 11 best players in the world after the World Championships, Gallardo, a speed freak. And I tried to give him problems and be an obstacle. And after 10 minutes, I didn't know which direction we were playing.
Yes.
I didn't know which jersey we wore.
He completely confounded you.
He confounded me, bamboozled me, and I was so exhausted after 10 minutes that I crawled off the field and vomited in some bushes for an hour and a half. One guy pulls me out on my legs and talks to me, and he says, "You did well. You played against one of the best in the world. Doesn't matter if you're defeated like that." And we were friends instantly.
Oh, so it wasn't with the soccer player that you became friends.
No,
you became friends with the man who pulled you out of the bushes while vomiting.
Yes, exactly.
So that's a guy who you could instantaneously be friends with. But Conan O'Brien, no, not possible. I hope that you start to vomit at some point in this interview, and I will rescue you.
I will not.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. Drink this. I have a little something in there. Well, I'm going to say something else. What do I call you? Because I have great respect for you.
Call me Werner.
Okay.
First name.
Is it Werner with a V?
Well, we say Werner in German. Don't try.
I'm going to try Werner.
Yeah, well, no, it will be too rough, tough.
Okay, I won't
do
it then.
Let
me say that I know from reading your book, which, by the way, let me just give the title of this book, Every Man for Himself and God Against All.
Yeah.
Thank God this isn't a children's book. Yeah. Can you imagine saying, okay, little Timmy, it's time to go to sleep. We're going to read Every Man for Himself and God Against All.
Sure, yes.
I don't think that boy would ever go to sleep. That's a terrifying idea. But I read your book, and you describe yourself as a bit of a loner. Do you have a big circle of friends, or it's not your natural way?
No, a circle of real friends is small mm-hmm. and very intense.
Yes.
The only problem is that I live so far out, and that's Los Angeles. And my friends are in Peru, they are in Germany, they are in India.
Yes.
They are in Sicily. Mm-hmm. So that's the hard part of it.
Here's a question that just occurred to me. We now have this technology that really exploded in Zoom, and everyone is saying, well, it's fantastic because I can keep up my friendships with people who live far away. I have a problem with Zoom. I don't feel like I'm really communicating with the person when I'm on Zoom. It doesn't I feel like something essential is being extracted from the interaction. Is that possible?
Yeah, you're totally right, although I use it. But I use it only with people whom I know very well. Mm-hmm. So, but I have to refresh the physical contact with them. I want to embrace them directly once in a while. I want to laugh with them. I want to cook a meal for them.
Yes.
So, and then it's okay that you do one or two Zoom calls. Sometimes they are business Zoom calls, they have to be made because there is somebody involved in a project who is in Australia, somebody who is in the United Kingdom in London, and I'm in Los Angeles. So yes, it's very hard to get them together.
I'm trying to imagine when you would create, and I was thinking about your whole body of work, which is mind-boggling. There were so many times where you've put yourself in extreme positions as a director. And I'm thinking that you couldn't just sit still in your office and be on a Zoom. You would need to be on a raft floating down a river in Peru, battling the elements on your Zoom while everyone else was talking. Do you know what I mean? That you would, you, Werner Herzog, would have to be, it feels like that would be the kind of Zoom you would want to have, is to put yourself way out there.
No, you have to be really out there, and Zoom belongs somewhere else. It's a different world, and you have to make a decision. Do you want to use it for what purposes?
Yep.
For example, I'm probably the last holdout who doesn't use a cell phone.
You don't have a cell phone.
I don't have a cell phone now. But it's for cultural reasons. I'm not nostalgic. So I want to derive my interaction or my knowledge of the real world in direct contact with the world. The most intense would be traveling on foot, which I have done.
This is a quote. You said it in your book, and it really stuck with me. The world reveals itself to those who travel on foot.
Yeah.
It's important to you to walk and see things in real time.
It's not just real time. You are unprotected when you travel on foot, and I don't mean backpacking with your whole household on your back, your tent, your sleeping bag, your cooking utensils, and so on. And I'm a lazy bum like everyone else. Mm-hmm. I would not travel on foot unless there was an existentially important reason for it. Mm-hmm. For example, I would travel on foot when my mentor, very old woman, by then 80 years old, Jewish, who had fled Nazi Germany on the day when Hitler took power, and she was in hiding in France during the Second World War and the Nazi regime. And she became my mentor and was very important. And when she was dying, I said, I'm not flying. I'm not taking the train, or I'm not going by car. I will come on foot 1,000 kilometers.
Oh, wow.
And it was early winter and snowstorms and hail and rain and whatever. And I would sleep under bridges sometimes in the hay of a barn, or I would open a vacation home that was uninhabited with some sort of tools, surgical tools. Without breaking a lock, I can open it and close it again and sleep in there. So, and she was out of hospital, by the way, when I arrived. And she,
that's incredible.
8 years later, when she was 88, probably 88, because we do not know exactly how old she became, she celebrated her 75th birthday at least twice, maybe three times. Normally women start to cheat about their age much earlier, but she had 75.
I've been celebrating my 35th and now for a long time.
She summoned me 8 years later. She summons me to Paris, and she said to me, just over a cup of tea, there's still this spell upon me that I must not die. You put that spell on me. And I'm old now. I'm almost blind. I cannot read books, which is the joy of my life. I cannot see movies, which is the other joy of my life. I'm lame. I can barely walk. So can you lift the spell off of me? And I said, okay, yes, it's lifted. And 8 days later, she died. And it was good. It was right. She had put me in a position where I had become independent and strong and self-confident, and you just name it.
That's a beautiful story. You touch on your childhood, which is not of this, I mean, clearly not of this century, but it feels like your childhood could have been 400 years ago. You grew up in such poverty. You grew up in this, I mean, you're born, as you say in the book, at this moment when fortunes are changing for the German army.
Right.
In North Africa, Rommel is about to start losing, and the Germans have invaded Stalingrad, which is the beginning of the end. So, but you grow up in this great tumult and terrible poverty, and you say that you weren't really aware that you were poor other than you were hungry a lot.
Yes, that's when you really know you are poor. And my mother would have a loaf of bread, one loaf for my two brothers and me and her, four people. And she would make a gruel for each day, and each of us had one thin slice of bread per day. Mm-hmm. But normally by Friday, when we were so hungry, we had eaten the whole loaf of bread, and we hoped that she would find something somewhere. But sometimes it was always Saturday, Sunday, that was the worst, when there was nothing. So, and I remember that very well. And we were wailing and tugging at her skirt, and she spun her. I remember her very well for that. She spins around, completely composed, but with an anger and despair in her face that I've never seen before or after. And very calmly she says, "Boys, if I could cut it out of my ribs, I would cut it out of my ribs, but I can't, so you shut up." And that made a big, big impression on me, of course. But many people have grown up hungry or poor. There's nothing wrong about that. For children, it's much easier than for the parents. When a mother cannot feed the children anymore, that's a real awful thing.
It's interesting because I've been thinking about all of your work, and what comes up so often for me, and this is my interpretation, and so much, there's been so much discussion of your work, but will, there's an iron will that you have. And I'm wondering, with these film productions, which are, you know, impossible to pull off, you're in the jungle, it's things are collapsing, your main actor, Klaus Kinski, wants to murder you, you want to murder him. It all sounds impossible, and yet you always keep going. And I'm wondering, is that...
And you have to move a ship over a mountain.
In Fitzcarraldo, you have to move a ship over a mountain, and you've made work about how difficult the work was. There are documentaries about how impossible the project is. And what I keep coming back to are a couple of themes, and one is will. Iron will. And I'm wondering, was that something, in your opinion, is that in your soul, or was in your genetics, or was that something that somehow was the product of having so little growing up?
I think it's not a correct description to point at iron will, because you can dissuade me from my will with a real good argument. And I do the doable. I really do the doable. I knew I could move a ship over a mountain in the jungle.
Okay.
It can be done, and I knew I would be able to do it, although nobody believed in it anymore. And you become very solitary when there are 800 people around and nobody believes in it. And the next town where you can buy a torchlight battery is 800 kilometers away. So you become very solitary, but it's not... I wouldn't call it iron will. It's a very, very clear vision.
Yeah, okay.
A very deep vision in me. And I knew moving a ship over a mountain would be a great metaphor, something like Moby Dick.
Yes.
Yeah. The white whale, something embedded very deep in our soul, in our collective soul, probably. And I can articulate it. And all of a sudden, everybody understands it. Although I must confess, metaphor for what, I cannot explain.
Well, everyone can have their own interpretation, because
it's better we've all, that way.
We've all, in our lives, we've all pulled a giant ship over a mountain.
Sure.
And when I say that, I mean we've all battled with something that most people thought, well, that can't be done.
Yeah.
I'm curious if, when I look at your work, I think, you seem very solid the whole time, even during all this insanity and chaos. You seem very solid, and I think, do you have a good mask, a good poker face, or did you feel true despair?
If there's only a mask, it would get cracks and it would become visible that it's only posing.
Right.
You have to have it in you.
Yeah.
So what can I say? It has carried me that I'm just myself, and essentially myself in many of the situations.
A lot of beaches out there, but only one beach is the beach.
Why did your voice change?
You heard me. Only one beach is the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Say it with me. Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach.
You didn't. That's just a phrase.
Sorry.
You don't have to say it with
me.
Okay. Myrtle Beach is 60 miles where you belong. Can you believe that? Everyone always talks about Myrtle Beach being the best beach. So much so that people refer to it as the beach.
Yeah.
The beach is where your best self comes out. Myrtle Beach has 60 miles of uninterrupted coastline and endless things to do on your trip. You love to eat, do ya?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the answer to that one. There are over 2,000 restaurants serving up fresh seafood, southern classics, and low country cuisine. Love music? Who doesn't? Live music is the soundtrack to the beach, or as I call it, the beach. There's live music every night of the week, all year round. Plan your trip to the beach at visitmyrtlebeach.com. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere, endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money, or you can go after their fortune changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. You know, it's only a matter of time until your check engine light comes on, which could equal an expensive repair bill, and a new engine can cost up to $6,000.
Don't I know it?
But this is why you need this product I'm about to mention right now.
Okay.
CarShield. CarShield offers plans with low monthly rates that you can pay for your expensive repairs on your out-of-warranty car, truck, or SUV. It's so nice to have that protection of CarShield.
I know.
I believe. That's my belief. Some people have other beliefs, maybe religious beliefs. I think CarShield. CarShield plans provide protection on up to 5,000 major parts and systems, including items like transmission, engine, even your entertainment system.
Mm.
Just call CarShield and choose the mechanic to do the work. CarShield administrators will handle the rest and save you money. Look, I saw your car today. You've got a beautiful car, but you've got to haul your family around in this car. This is a vital piece of machinery for you. You need CarShield.
I do. And, you know, I don't take care of my cars very well. So CarShield, it would definitely come in handy.
You know, and also with their A rating from the BBB, don't ask me, CarShield is the name you can trust to save you money on covered auto repairs. Now's the time to make the smart choice to protect yourself from the sky-high auto repair bills. Visit CarShield.com/Conan. Save 20% today. Again, that's CarShield.com/Conan to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Conan to lock in your price today. There's another theme that you love to explore, which is madness. It comes up again and again and again. And I was noticing it even came up in so many of your films. There's that line between someone being obsessed and have they gone mad? Have they lost control of themselves? You've worked with people who could clinically be called mad, if that's a real clinical diagnosis anymore. When you did your documentary Encounters at the End of the World and you're in Antarctica, I remember very clearly there's a scene where you're looking at the penguins and you start to wonder, have they gone mad?
At least one.
At least one. Has there one penguin gone mad? But I thought, well, Werner Herzog went all the way to Antarctica and he's looking at penguins and he's still wondering about madness. Is it right that that is a true, that's a theme that you like to try and mine or explore?
Yes, it's not only madness, but a state where we can be out or beyond ourselves, like an ecstasy. like religious mystics in the late Middle Ages, or it could be a penguin. I asked a penguin researcher and I was told he has not spoken to anyone for 24 years. So I said, I will be the first one. And I tell him some things that he has never heard. Why do, for example, species of ants create colonies of slaves of some sort of lice that they milked for droplets of sugar? Mm-hmm. Why is that? And why does a chimp not saddle the goat and ride off into the sunset of Death Valley or Monument Valley?
Yeah.
Why does this happen? Is there insanity among animals, not only among people? Is there insanity among penguins? Mm-hmm. Some, because I observed a penguin that marches right into the continent, and it's 5,000 kilometers of ice and mountains. And there's no way to turn the penguin around. You can do that. And you shouldn't do it, by the way. But you can turn it around. It will immediately stubbornly march into his death, into the interior of the continent. Not to the water, not to the colony. So what is going on? I've been fascinated by this.
Famously, it's been much discussed, but it's so riveting. You had this work dynamic with the actor Klaus Kinski, and there's something in it that I understand. I understand because I've watched all the films. I've watched the documentaries about the making of the films. Yeah. I've seen him completely lose control. I've seen in real time people who are working on the film plotting to kill Kinski, Kinski plotting to and threatening to kill you, you plotting to kill Kinski. And I swear to you that what I'm saying is true right now. I've worked in comedy for, you know, 40 years, and for 30 of those years, I worked many times out in the field making comedy under duress in strange conditions. Yeah. And I've wanted to kill people that I've worked with. One of them's here.
Oh
no! But I've gotten to an altered state at times. I've been hungry and cold, and we've needed to get this shot. And a lot of what I do is somewhat improvisational, and I need to improvise something and make something happen.
Yeah.
And I've
you have to deliver,
and I have to deliver something. And I do think there are times when I've gone to another state. And I'm thinking specifically of an episode I did where we were shooting in Italy and it was late in the day and we were exhausted and suddenly we had to shoot a thing where we're hunting for truffles. And I started to lose it. And I think I lost my mind during the truffle hunt and started hopping around like a rabbit. Now, anyone watching it might think, I don't know what's happening with Conan, or maybe he's just doing this because he thinks it's funny. No, I really did lose it and have this kind of madness. But I also understand I'm kind of in love with it. There's a part of me that is attracted to it. And of course, what you are doing, multiply that by 1,000, your work with Kinski. But when you say afterwards, no, we were brothers, to most people, that would seem impossible that this man could be screaming at you and abusing you and you screaming back at him. But no, I understand it. I understand how you can go through that with someone, but also cherish that bond. Does that...
It's hard to describe it, and in my book I describe quite a bit about it. Number one, there is a side to all this which is hilarious. Number two, I've never lost it. I cannot remember that I ever lost it. I've always been the calmest of calm in such situations.
Yes, that's right. You don't lose it. Yeah,
he would scream at the native people in the rainforest, and they would huddle, sit down, because they solve their conflicts very quietly, whispering in whispering voices. And they came afterwards to me, and one of their chiefs said to me, you know, we were afraid, but don't you believe we were afraid of this screaming madman? They were afraid of me because I was so quiet.
Ah, okay.
And I really meant business. And in moments of real confrontation, Kinski understood when I explained to him things very, very calmly. This is impermissible. This cannot be done. What you are trying, there's a task that is beyond the two of us. we have to stick to it or else. And he would know that this or else would mean he would be a dead man within 30 seconds flat. I didn't have to spell it out.
You just did, though. Yeah, that's incredible.
No, but that's good. You're doing it now. You're doing it now.
let's put it. Let's put it simply.
Yeah.
You have to have it in you to stop at a certain moment and to understand. Yes, you do not do this. You're not going to kill each other. It's a beautiful script.
Yes,
which is outside of the movie, and. The script is not going to happen. Otherwise, you end up on death row. And I have made 9 films on death row. And I know that every single one on death row that I met, men and women, were only a step away from what I am or what almost all of us are.
Yeah, that's true.
Very human beings.
It's interesting because there's this new movement that's being discussed lately, and it was written about the other day, I think, in the New York Times, which said when dealing with someone who's out of control or psychotic, they say become a gray rock, become bland and very, very sort of almost disinterested, and they say it's the best way to treat them. So had you screamed back at Kinski and entertained and tried to meet him scream for scream, the whole thing would have blown up. By staying almost inert, as you did.
No, we had a plane crash and only garbled messages in our camp. We didn't know exactly where was it, how many people, can we...
Was this a plane that was coming to this film shoot?
To our film, to our set, transporting extras. And I tried to make sense what it was. In Kinski at that morning, we served coffee... in all the huts, and he was the last one because we altered the line of who would be first or last. His coffee was lukewarm. He just lost it over it, and he kept yelling and screaming for an hour and a half, foam at his mouth. I mean, literally, I'm not exaggerating, screaming at the top of his lung, that close to my face, that close. And I tried to explain, Klaus, there's a plane down. We need to understand what the radio, the garbled radio, is transmitting to us. So, and finally, I couldn't get rid of him. I went to my hut. I had one little piece of chocolate, very good chocolate left, and I stood right in his face and ate the chocolate. That was too much for him because chocolate was the most valuable item in the camp.
Yes.
And I ate my last piece of chocolate, and he just fell silent and withdrew.
Yes, it's like you shut down the computer. It just went to the Apple. It went to the Apple logo. Yeah, there's nothing he could do at that moment.
Yeah.
I it's fascinating because you've done this very intense and beloved work, and you explore these intense themes, but because of your fame and notoriety, you're also being asked to do these other side projects, which are very popular in popular mm-hmm. culture. You've been a guest on The Simpsons.
Yes.
More than once.
Mandalorian.
You're in the Mandalorian.
Jack Reacher.
Yes, Jack Reacher. Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
And I'm curious where you've, how you reconcile, because it's such a chasm between being in Peru, your life threatened by a madman trying to make this magnum opus, and then you're on the set of mm-hmm. The Simpsons, or you're with Baby Yoda on The Mandalorian. Is it? It must be quite fascinating to imagine the trips you've taken in your life.
Sure, yes, and it's I do not want to miss any of that because I found The Simpsons very fascinating, intelligent, and a lot of anarchy in it. Mm-hmm. And when I was invited to speak a role, I immediately said, do they speak? I cannot believe that. I thought there were only like comic strips printed in newspapers. I had never seen it. And I think Matt Groening, who started it, he mm-hmm. said to me, don't you know, since 24 years, we are on a TV station.
One of the most popular TV shows of all time around the world.
I did not know that that it existed. So I asked for a DVD to show me a little bit so that I could see how or hear how cartoonish the voices would be.
Yeah.
They actually sent a few of them to me, and they said, you don't need to be cartoonish. Just speak with your accent. It's wild enough.
Yes.
Wild enough for us. So, and I acknowledged, yes. And I really, really enjoyed it. I'm good at that. And in Jack Reacher, there are bad guys. They open fire. They have huge assault rifles. They swear. They shout. They yell at you. They have fist fights. I'm the epicenter of evil. I have very few fingers left. I ate them in a gulag to avoid being sent to a lead mine and lose my life there. And I'm blind in I have one blind eye, uh-huh. And I only have my voice to spread terror and a calm voice. And one of the villains, the sub-villain, who made a mistake. I tell him you can get away with it. If you're really determined not to do that again, you have to eat your fingers as I do it, as I did it.
Yeah.
And he tries and tries, and I very calmly encourage him. I say, that was already good. I know you can do it. Just try harder. And it's so frightening that when the film was out, friends of my wife in Paris, they called her and they said, Lena, are you married to that man? You know, we are only one night flight away from you. We can give you shelter. So I knew I was good. And that's my best reward.
The Mandalorian, there's so much secrecy around that shoot. What was that experience like for you?
Well, secrecy went so far that I had to sign a contract for a film, Huckleberry Finn, not Mandalorian.
They misnamed
it, had your costumes. You couldn't leave the studio unless you put a big tunic all over you and you were not allowed to speak about what was going on inside. So I understand that because it's such a worldwide phenomenon and fans were lurking outside the hedges with their little cameras and trying to snap a few photos. So, but the experience was very, very interesting because Jon Favreau, who is a mastermind behind all this, he invited me. I was always invited. I never competed for any part. Mm-hmm. I never was in any audition. And he apparently loves my films and loves my writings. And he wanted to make me as a person visible for a larger audience in the world. That's a guy who did all these things. And you see, we are speaking about my films and my acting, mm-hmm. but equally important, I think, is writing. From the very, very beginning, I've been a writer. And I started out writing when I was 15, 16, and I published my first books decades ago in the early 70s, and they are still constantly being reprinted. And I keep saying, and it's basically to deaf ears, and it will fall on deaf ears here as well, but time is on my side. I keep saying the written things, my books, my prose, my poetry, with all probability will have a longer life than my films. I will be remembered for my writings, not so much for my films.
You write beautifully.
Yeah.
You are a terrific and disciplined writer, and your writing's very lyrical. And I think that can travel through all kinds of changes in how people experience entertainment, probably more safely and durably than maybe film can. So I think that's possible.
Books are more durable than movies. That's a strange thing, but it's a fact. You can see it. And I've always loved to write poetry and to, you see, when you look at my memoirs, people are looking for, let's say, content. What did he do in this period of his life? It's not, I'm not like, it's not an encyclopedia of my life. It's memoirs and it's prose. It's very, very intense writing. I write, for example, all of a sudden in this book, Every Man for Himself and God Against All, I insert 5 ballads of the little soldier. Mm-hmm. I was once in Nicaragua, Honduras with child soldiers between 8 and 11. And I mean, tragic, tragic.
And this is 8 and 11 intense, year olds with weapons.
With weapons and in warfare. And some of them whom I filmed were dead 3 weeks later. Mm. And I still have them on film. An 8-year-old boy, angelic looking and with a catastrophic, tragic life behind him where his parents were killed in front of his eyes and he decided to become a soldier, a warrior. But and all of a sudden there are 5 ballads of the little soldier. I mm-hmm. insert diaries when I traveled on foot around Germany. I followed once all the sinuations of the German border to hold the country together when it was not united yet. I said to myself, politics has given up. So it's only the poets who can hold it together. Mm-hmm. And I traveled on foot around my own country. And I'm writing while I'm walking. And some of the most beautiful, intense prose that I ever wrote was on that, traveling on foot. Or off walking in ice when I traveled on foot from Munich to Paris. When things were essentially somehow reduced to a pilgrimage, to a big quest, not the joy of walking. Of course, I also enjoyed it. I knew that, and I'm not superstitious, but I knew when I arrived on foot, Lotte Eisner would be out of hospital. And she would live. Mm-hmm. And she actually did.
And she believed it was because you put a spell on her.
No, she said that jokingly years later, just before she
died.
Oh,
I thought you
died.
Had that ability, and I was going to ask for it before you go. I was going to say, please, before you go, one more thing. Yeah. I'd like to live to 98, and then I'll ask to see you again. Because I'll be in a lot of pain. There was a revelation in the book that I found interesting, because you were such a thoughtful person. I don't think your mind ever shuts off. You don't believe in therapy.
I'm very cautious about it because it hasn't done no good to no one. I think it's one of the monumental mistakes of the 20th century, among many others. The big social utopias, communism, fascism have led to incredible disasters, overpopulation of our planet, and you just name it. Destruction of what nature is, all of that started really in the 20th century. And one of the things that are one of the great mistakes of the 20th century is psychoanalysis. Of course, it started some decades earlier, but it really blossomed in the 20th century. And I do believe that the 20th century in its entirety was a mistake. And going back to psychoanalysis, I can give you a parable. When you move into a new home and you illuminate this home to its very last recesses and corners with neon lights, everything is illuminated. This house becomes uninhabitable, and human beings illuminated to the darkest corners of their soul become uninhabitable, I say it in quotes now. And you should be careful what you do. Of course, there are clinical cases, and you better do it. But this mass phenomenon,
yep,
to think that everything in your inner balance and in your soul and in your emotionality and so will be solved by psychoanalysis, I do not think it is a good approach.
It's funny because I think it's a byproduct of this obsession. And you live in Los Angeles, so you see this now. In the 21st century in Los Angeles, there's just this obsession with I want to eat all the perfect foods. I want to make sure that I get all the perfect treatments.
Yeah.
I want to achieve this perfect state of balance.
Yoga classes for 5 years old, 5 year olds.
Well, they bend so easily.
Yeah, but I'm the great defender of Los Angeles. Everybody chuckles and says,
I love Los Angeles too.
You think, the glitz and glamour of Los Angeles, but everything in the last half century somehow set the pace and the thinking and the trends of the world without, I mean, being completely trendy, originated here.
Yeah.
The internet was born here. The internet, and I've seen the place where the first contact was made with routers and servers. Reusable rockets are being built in the perimeters of the city itself. I mean, a southern outskirt, but southern part of it. All the great painters are
here. I think the art scene here is
the art scene.
Very impressive.
They are not in New York anymore. That was early 50s or so. Now they are here. The writers, the mathematicians, also the, of course, the stupidities, crazy sects. Inline skating is fine, but
you're listening to Werner Herzog's list of what's in and what's out, what's hot and what's cold.
I'm very much beloved by skateboarders.
Oh, good. Yeah,
there's a community of skateboarders.
It's good to have them on your
out.
Side. Yeah.
Yes, and they're on my side, and I'm on theirs because. The futility and the insistence, try it again, try it again, try it again. You will do this jump up onto the onto the railing of...
No, don't
of
do this. That.
Now I'm too old for that. And, and I've done ski jumping and ski flying and almost died in doing that. But anyway, you do the wild stuff when you're young. But the crazy things also come from here. Originated here, and they have worldwide repercussions. It happens, and there's no other city. Does it happen in Chicago or in London or in Florence or in Mumbai or in Buenos Aires? No, it's Los Angeles. It's wonderful to live in a city where all these things are happening.
All these things are happening. It's a very vibrant community. I guess you love to participate. You love to know what's going on. So you do watch some things that maybe your typical person might think Werner Herzog doesn't view. You watch the Kardashians.
Very, very few, but I do watch. I do watch some trash TV, like let's say WrestleMania,
and there hell was
hell yeah. Sona's like hurts up. Enough about madness.
Yes. No. Let's talk about wrestling.
But it's very interesting because it's a very crude form of drama has emerged, and it's a drama that are not in the fight itself. The fights are interrupted by commercials, meaning they're not that important, but the owner of the franchise shows up in the ring, his wife, alleged wife, in a wheelchair and blind, and he has three sexy women in his arm, and rants against his wife in the wheelchair, and all of a sudden you have a form of drama going on, a new form emerging apparently. Probably as crude as ancient Greek drama started out in the 5th century before Christ. Mm-hmm. So I watch it for number one. I think the poet must not close his eyes, avert his eyes. You have to know in which world you are living.
See
you
everything.
Know, yes.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against, let's say, once in a while, it isn't on the air anymore. Here comes Honey Boo Boo, for example. No, but it's... Yeah.
That's my favorite. The way you said it is going to be a... It'll be a meme where that's...
No, but very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
There's something deep about society in it, deep about something deep about the American dream that goes awry somehow. And I can see how the American dream is functioning because I've been in the heartland of America. Mm-hmm. I have worked in Wisconsin. I've worked in Louisiana. I've worked in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Pittsburgh with a guest family who picked me up from the street when I was homeless. Without hesitation, I was part of the best that America can give you. And I think much of the political chasm between left and right is due to the neglect of the center, the heartland of America. People say they're the flyovers, but they live in Boston or in Seattle or in Los Angeles and New York. And I ask, have you ever been in Wisconsin? No, but I have worked there. So and I find it an outrage that some of the best of America, very good people living there, of course underrepresented in the media, with much less access to education, underpaid, without that open access to the American dream, and this is why you have such conflicts now.
Yes,
I say why don't you contact your old school buddies, tell them what you are doing, and be interested in what they are doing. What are they thinking? What are they doing? Put them on your radar. Let them know they are around there and you like them. And you like Arkansas and you like Wisconsin.
And do they do it?
No. Unfortunately, too. Very few, no.
You are very prolific with your film work, your writing. What's the plan now? What's in the next couple of years?
Well, I've written a screenplay for a story that's long in me, and I describe it in my memoirs. It's called Bucking Fastard.
It's a great title.
A slip of tongue, yeah. And it's about twin sisters, identical twins who spoke in unison. And we have had twins. We know sometimes they develop their own secretive language. But these twins, unique, we have never seen or heard of anyone else, and I was in very close contact with them. They spoke in unison. When they opened the door and they said, please come in, and do you want to have a cup of tea? That can be ritualized and rehearsed. But they would answer a question that they could not expect in unison. There was a court case, a truck driver, an ugly purple-faced truck driver had a restraining order against them. And in court, they were allowed to testify in the witness stand together.
Oh, my God.
But it's an iron principle. If you are in court, you, Conan, will testify, and then
the next
your
person.
Sibling will testify, and then the next person. There was an exception. They spoke in unison because they would be terrified and would unravel and start shouting and so. And across the courtroom, they shouted to the truck driver, he's lying. Every word he's saying is a lie. He's lying under oath. And then simultaneously, the bucking fastard is lying.
So they both made the same mistake at the same time.
Same slip of tongue in the same moment, even that.
I need to reveal that Sona has twins.
Yeah.
She's shown us video, the cameras of them communicating with each other before they could really talk.
Yes.
And they are having full on, it's nonsense to us, but you understand it is a full on.
They're having a full conversation. I don't understand a word of it. It's fascinating to watch.
But it's a separate language. They do not speak in unison.
No,
and they do
they
not
don't.
Make up. I said, hey, girls, I said girls, even though they were not girls anymore, they were in their early 40s or late 30s, I said to them, let's go out to a restaurant. And they whispered to each other, making up, but they whispered in unison. And they said, no, a restaurant, and there are these waiters in tuxedos. And so I said, no, let's go to a fish and chip place around the corner. They speak in in unison to each other. And then they said, yeah, let's do it.
So when is this coming out?
There's only a screenplay. It's not financed yet. It's not shot yet.
I'll give you the money.
But it's, that would be nice, but...
Oh, you doubt I have it, do you? Well, yeah. I have tens of thousands of dollars. So I think about the famous story about you is that you stole your first camera. Yeah. You didn't have a camera and you stole it. And I love this line from the book. You say, I refuse to think of it as stealing. You said, I was exercising a natural right to put the camera to its intended use.
I thought that is such a fantastic rationalization, but also it makes perfect sense. But you had so many limits. And I wonder, Werner Herzog, if you went into a black hole and you appeared today as a young man, your early 20s, and you have... Yeah. iPhones,
yes,
and you have computers that can, laptops that can edit. How different are the films? Are they completely different films?
Films wouldn't be different.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't matter if I shoot it on celluloid. When I started, it was 35 millimeter celluloid. Very clumsy, expensive, took a long time to make a film, much longer than today. And yet, with the clear vision that I had. Mm-hmm. I've done one film after the other. I've done, I don't know, over 70 films by now. Yeah. And I've published at least 10 books. And I have acted in at least 20 films. And I've staged operas. So it wouldn't look different. Mm-hmm. Because writing a book, whether you write it on a laptop or in longhand, doesn't make any difference at all.
This has been a wonderful treat. I have spoken to you before.
Yes, I remember.
I do. Thank you for remembering. I do love this format because in the other format, I could talk to you for 7-8 minutes about Grizzly Man or 9 minutes. And then thank you very much. Werner Herzog and the band plays.
And there had to be a commercial.
Yeah. And this this format enables me to have the kind of conversation with you that I've always wanted to have. So it's a gift.
I had the feeling when I walked in here and I knew this is your new home now and you've created it for yourself. I would have advised you at that time in conflict with, was it NBC or mm-hmm. what was the station?
Oh, who can remember? Yeah, NBC.
Whatever it was. Yeah. Buy the station. Buy the station and fire them all.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You take over.
I didn't quite have that money at the time.
A 60-minute segment.
Well, maybe I'll be hitting you up for financing.
But you will out-talk them. You will outnumber them.
Yeah.
You will out-brilliant them. You outshine them and you will out-talk them. You have the gift of gab.
You know, that's the funny thing is if you just, if you love the work, you're okay. So it doesn't matter what the platform is. If you love the work, and that's what's so inspirational about you is you were not raised with a silver spoon in your mouth. You weren't sent to, you know, USC film school at a young age and given a posh internship. There's no reason why you should be a prolific, amazing filmmaker. You didn't see a film till relatively late in your childhood.
You didn't know cinema existed. Yeah.
And yet it was in you and here we are. And so I think if you're doing the work and you have things to say and you have things that you need to say, the rest will take care of itself. I believe that.
That sounds very encouraging and... I will walk out here 10 pounds lighter.
Absolute joy, Werner Herzog. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. The book, I just want to say, this is a fantastic, lovely book, Every Man for Himself and God Against All, a memoir, and a very special memoir, because you're right. It is not just recounting what happened, A, B, C, D, E. It's a fantastic story, but also beautiful and poetic and... worthy of your time. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sona, is your money, is it working for you? Is it just kind of sitting around being lazy?
I mean, it's underneath my mattress. Isn't that where it should be?
I know that's what we were taught by our great-grandparents.
Yeah.
But your hard-earned cash should always be working
towards a better financial future. It's nice to be in the driver's seat and have autonomy when making investments, which is easy to do with Robinhood. You might know Robinhood pioneered free stock trading. Changed the face of investing. They're still doing it today. They offer innovative products like IRAs, EFTs, options, and more to over 26 million funded accounts.
What?
With Robinhood, it's simple to make investments towards your future goals, whatever those may be. We all have some bucket list items to cross off, and Robinhood has tools to help pursue them. Investing a small amount now could make a big difference 30 years down the road. I'm telling you.
I need someone to tell me what to do with my money because I don't know anything.
Yeah, your money's falling out of your pocket right now.
I know.
It's just wherever Sona goes, there's a trail of money.
I just stuff all of my earnings into my pockets.
Yeah, probably not a good idea. Well, it's good you don't make that much. Well, anyway, take your financial future by the reins. Download the app or visit Robinhood.com to learn more. Investing involves risks and loss of principal is possible. Returns are not guaranteed, okay? Robinhood Financial LLC members, SIPC is a registered broker-dealer.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
You know, recently we did a segment about a new voicemail number, and people could call in and leave a voicemail, and maybe we could answer the questions, and it worked. We've got some voicemails.
Oh, good. New voicemails. I love to hear the vox populi. Voice of the people.
Yes, I know.
I'm sorry. Sona, okay. I know you're new here. Very excited to hear what they have to say.
Hit it, Eduardo.
Hey, Conan. I am a high school U.S. history teacher, and I have to teach high school juniors about Abraham Lincoln sometime around November, December. You know, I know you're a big Lincoln and Civil War buff, and so I thought, you know, surely you can make a great connection to the TikTok generation or whatever they call themselves and help me find a way to just really hammer home the historical importance of the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln. So if you could help me out, that'd be great. And also, that truly was the worst outgoing voicemail message of all time. I loved it. Thanks.
Is it me?
It's all of us.
Oh.
I don't remember what the outgoing voicemail message was, but my apologies.
Kind of coaching Sona on how to do it.
Yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, this is a huge responsibility.
You're up to it.
No. To explain the significance of President Abraham Lincoln and to explain the Civil War to these students in what? And what length of time?
I'll give you 3 minutes.
Oh, that's insane. Look, kids, put down your iPhones.
Oh, you lost them already.
You did.
You lost them already. Just Photoshop his head onto a dancing TikTok person.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Photoshop whatever you just said. Now, what's that? Help me, Sona. How would I communicate with the TikTok generation?
I'm beyond this generation. I don't know. I have no idea. You have a really good way of connecting with people.
Right, but they're
not. And it's something you like.
Right. Civil War. Crazy carnage.
Yes.
I mean, aren't kids into that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just insane. You know how many people die in, if you added up all the John Wick movies?
Yes.
Multiply that by like 100,000.
Okay, yes.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine just there's a whole bunch of John Wicks in the South and there's a whole bunch of John Wicks in the North.
Uh-huh.
And they just go towards each other.
Good.
The ones in the North are wearing blue suits. And the ones in the South are wearing gray suits and they just go at it. And then there's this guy. Who's the guy who runs the hotel?
Oh, Ian McShane.
Ian McShane. But what's his character's name in the John Wick movies?
I
forget.
I have no idea.
We'll come up with it.
The Continental.
Yeah, the hotel is called the Continental. Well, in this, the Continental Hotel is the White House, okay? That's run by Winston. So Abraham Lincoln was a British guy played by Ian McShane.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and he's the one that's sort of watching in the background and really not doing anything, just sort of sipping.
Oh, you said Abraham Lincoln's not doing
anything?
Not.
He's just sitting around watching massive armies of John Wicks fight each other and going, and so it begins.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. And now it has begun. And just keeps, and seems pretty ineffectual and doesn't really do much at all.
Unfortunately, that's Lincoln, except he did do stuff. Wrote amazing speeches, Gettysburg Address.
No, they're boring. You're losing them.
Okay.
Civil War was started by the killing of a dog.
What happens is the South killed our dog.
Okay. Yes.
And then the South called its dad and said, "Don't worry, it's just some asshole. I just killed his dog." And he went, "What?
Yeah.
You killed the North's dog?" And then all the John Wicks from the North came after the John Wicks from the South. And look, I'm going to get a lot of mail from people in the South saying, "No, they killed our dog." And it's like, no. I'm from Boston, so fuck you. Anyway, all these John Wicks are fighting each other, and it's absolutely insane. And it goes on for 4 years. And you name it. Antietam, Cold Harbor.
You're losing them.
Oh. They're
steps
fighting
in Japan.
Just steps in Japan. They're fighting, around the Arc de Triomphe. And when there's no door on the car, John Wick's leaning out and he's firing. It's so fucking cool.
Lawrence Fishburne's there.
Yeah, and Lawrence Fishburne's there. And that's a little Bull Run. And
and the car.
Yeah, and then, wow, oh man. And then every now and then, Abraham Lincoln thinks about his wife who passed away a long time ago, and he's really sad.
Oh, yeah.
And he thinks about that. And that's Mary Todd Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although she didn't pass away in real life. She lived and she was crazy, batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And spent a lot of money and really lost it all the time.
And she's so hot.
Yeah, yeah. So hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what happened. It's just incredible. You gotta check this out. A John Wick that lasts 4 years.
Yeah.
Check it out, motherfuckers!
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonu Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta, because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members, because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.